Hello and welcome to The Rate Debate. I'm Darren Langer, co-head of fixed income at Yarra Capital, and joining me as always is my co-portfolio manager, Chris Rands.
Hello, everyone.
Well, it's the first Tuesday of August, and that means the RBA has just met. And to coin a phrase, or to steal a phrase rather, I would suggest that that hike from the RBA of 50 basis points probably could be considered a little bit on the dovish side, Chris. What was your thoughts from the statement?
I guess the idea of a dovish hike when they're hiking at the fastest pace that we've seen in 20 years is still a bit of a foreign idea to me. But certainly some of the language that they used in the statement made it look like it certainly is more dovish than the market expected. Previously, we saw a bit of a rally in the bonds. And so just some of the language that they use is they kind of told us now that they're not on a preset path, that they described the hike as normalization rather than a move from extraordinarily easy policy. And they kind of spoke as well about the uncertainty and, you know, risks around what they're doing, which we hadn't completely seen over the past few meetings.
Sure. There was one particular statement that seemed to be setting things up, at least the way I read it, that if they manage to thread the needle and we get a nice soft landing, it's all the RBA's doing. But if things go pear-shaped and horribly wrong, it's offshore factors to blame. Yeah, it was quite a negative start to the statement, and then they seemed to ease off as they went through about some of the more positive stuff. But it's certainly the opening part of the statement was more negative than I think we've seen from the RBA for a while.
Yeah, and I personally think that makes sense because the cash rate is now above where we started kind of pre-pandemic. So back in 2018, the cash rate was 1.5%. It's now risen up to 1.85. So the idea that we're at, you know, super accommodative levels doesn't hold true anymore. We're above where we started. And so you can look at it now and say, okay, well, how is the economy looking? How is it looking offshore? How can we move in the future? Because now we've moved, as I kind of said before, to a degree that we haven't seen since 1994, conditions probably should be starting to tighten up pretty soon.
Yeah, to me, the most important thing that was probably in the statement was the fact that they did mention that they're not on a preset path. We've had four rate hikes in a row. As far as I'm aware, that's probably the first time we've ever had four in a row. To me, that kind of says that perhaps a pause in September is at least possible or more on the consideration side. So maybe the RBA is thinking, yeah, you know, do we pause or do we go 25 rather than another 50? What do you think on that?
Certainly my view of this is from the beginning, they should have been going slow and steady. So I think certainly when you look at what's starting to occur offshore, there is signs now that they should be thinking about how they navigate from here. If you look at kind of why they would want to pause, you don't need to kind of look too far. You can see a potential recession forming in the US. You see the same circumstances potentially coming in Germany. China still seems to be slowing. They've got property problems. You're now seeing Australian house prices start to fall at a relatively quick pace. You know, there's signs that US housing will be falling at a quick pace, and that's all coming after, you know, very aggressive hikes. So certainly I think that there's a pretty good case here that they should slow down, survey what they've done, check what's going offshore. And if all of that clears up and we come through unscathed, well, we've got the whole of next year to start hiking again if they need to. It's not like they're really kind of behind the curve now, which many people thought they were before. They've done enough hikes to get them ahead. The problem is just going to be that, as we've said in the past, inflation is a lagging indicator. So it's very hard to tell if you've done enough until you actually see it start to slow down.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that most of the positive statements from the RBA were around employment, and they're around potential for consumers to keep spending. You know, as we've said before, employment tends to lag along with inflation. Spending is a little bit more difficult because most of the data that we've had so far has been probably prior to the last couple of hikes. So we haven't really got sort of up-to-date data on that sort of thing. But, you know, our feeling is that, you know, between the inflated prices that people are paying for food and other sort of goods, that it's likely to start denting discretionary spending as people move into having to pay more for discretionary goods. So it's really hard to see what else is positive out there. Most of the other things look pretty negative.
Yeah, and I think the flow on just kind of what you said then reminded me of, I've only really seen kind of one or two of the increases in my mortgage rate so far. So the speed with which they've been increasing it still hasn't even caught up to me, the prior ones they've done. So there will be a bit of a lag with what they've done because of the speed that they're doing it as well. And how that hits the spending is still a little bit unknown. But certainly, you know, the drops that you're seeing in consumer confidence globally is pretty alarming still.
Yeah, and talking about offshore, we saw this month that US GDP for the second quarter in a row has been negative. I think we mentioned the last podcast that we've never actually seen the Fed hike while they've had negative growth. I know there is some argument again around the fact that US employment is still quite strong and that it's not a technical recession. But, you know, there are good reasons to think that growth isn't likely to pick up from here. We're already starting to see prices paid components in some of the US numbers come off, which has been the main thing driving inflation. But worse, we're starting to see housing roll over and certainly other things. I think it's enough to say the US is, if it's not in recession, it's pretty close. But, you know, the hardest thing for me is that I just can't see how they're not going to keep getting worse. There doesn't seem to be a lot of positives there.
When you look at the US, the lead indicators for them started falling probably 3 months ago. At that point in time, you know, you kind of had one or two indicators that was troubling. But now, certainly when I look through kind of our lead indicators, you see trouble brewing everywhere. So, you know, manufacturing slowing, new home sales were down, housing starts were down, there's big build-ups in retail inventories. There's enough things there that you kind of scratch your head and you go, well, if you're going to put rates up another 150 points from here, where do you think that growth is going to come from? So certainly the first kind of move that we've seen over the past 6 months, it's only a relatively slow down. It's probably, you know, it's I think about 1.5% or something like that over 6 months. It's not terrible. But the forecast from the Fed and most forecasters was that it was actually going to be positive. Certainly when I looked through history, a move like this is signaling that a recession's coming and you're seeing it from the curve. So, you know, I would look at that and I would say, what do we think is going to end it?
One of the other things too has been interesting is that people seem to have accepted the fact the US is in recession and now are looking through it to, you know, how do we get out of this sort of recessionary environment? Some of our more optimistic colleagues are out there pointing to the fact that US recessions in particular, but you know, global recessions tend to be fairly shallow and then, you know, we pull out of them relatively fast, and that, you know, it's not something that we should be too depressed about. I guess the thing we sort of disagree with them is how recessions end. There's talk about, you know, growth picking up and the economy improving and things like that, but you know, I think in reality, we see that usually happens after they start cutting interest rates again.
Yeah, if you look back to about 1970, every recession in the US, rates fell by about 200 to 500 points, depending on kind of when and how long it lasted. And there was no circumstance where rates were actually going up. So when you look at kind of the thing that would generally bring you out of a recession is you cut rates, people start borrowing, the housing market picks up, all the things that you kind of expect are rate sensitive, whereas at the moment you're actually seeing the housing market slow because they're actively trying to slow it. You can put on top of that the fact that the US dollar's rallying, that oil's up, those things also generally constrict the economy as well. So my feeling coming into this year was the central banks don't want to see a recession, so they're going to be careful with rates and therefore not jag them up quickly. The thing that's made me very nervous is they're jagging them up quickly. It looks like the recession is almost here and they're still saying that we've probably got another 200 left in us. So if they were to go that additional 200, I don't think it's going to be very good at all. And I think to really forecast this idea that the economy is going to turn around and there won't be a big recession is they need to stop and probably potentially even look at cutting, which is why you're seeing the futures market in the US inverted.
Yeah, I think one of the things that worries me is that if we do get back into a cutting cycle, you know, 6, 9, 12 months later, after the hike cycle, we just go back through the same churn and burn with asset prices again. Nobody seems to have a solution to fixing some of the underlying causes, which are obviously, you know, partly, as we've said before, demographic issues with aging populations, but also it seems very hard to get growth in an economy above what is trend. You know, we get it up to sort of 3%, maybe 4% at times. And, you know, we end up back at 2%. You know, I don't think there's any magic bullet. And we've said before, perhaps, you know, we need to start accepting 2% growth as being normal. But, you know, I don't think certainly central banks and certainly not governments are willing to go there yet. But I guess what we don't really want to see is just a repeat of the last 2 years all over again. And then, you know, in 2025, 26, we're back in the same boat where we're having to tighten aggressively to try and stop the excesses from cutting too far.
Yeah, and I guess the flow on from that and why probably the central banks didn't go down the path that I kind of described, where you say, well, I can see a recession coming, so I'm going to slow down, is that asset prices still are super high. So maybe they think that they've got the ability to kind of continue leaning on the asset prices while growth still looks okay, and then maybe try and turn it around later. It feels dangerous to be doing that to me. Certainly when you look in the RBA forecast now, they're still saying a bit over 3% growth for this year and then dropping sub 2% for the next 2 years. So they seem to acknowledge that what they're doing will slow growth. But, you know, those forward forecasts that they make are not really generally worth the paper they're written on, as we know from, you know, the past inflation forecasts they've made. So it does stand to reason, I think, that they are trying to slow down growth. And because of that, you need to be wary of what will come after.
Yeah, and certainly we've mentioned this before, you know, inverted yield curves are telling you that something's not right. Usually that means that, you know, at some point in time, they're likely to drive the economy into a recession. We think we're already there in the US. We're certainly not there in Australia yet. Australia does look to be in a slightly stronger position. You know, I think, you know, when do you think we'll start to see the Aussie curve go inverted if we do keep tightening?
The Aussie curve, I think, is a little bit harder to forecast because commodity prices are still relatively high. So that's going to give us a boost. And I think that's really probably the reason people lean into to say, you know, while it does look like a recession's coming in Germany and the US, maybe we can avoid it here in Australia. If the RBA slows down here and, you know, they start talking 25 basis point hikes or, you know, maybe even pausing, then I would probably think that we could avoid curve inversion, mostly because we've been lagging the US by 6 months. So hopefully we get the signal that something's gone wrong in the US and then we can kind of avoid it because we've been 6 months delayed. When you look at the US though, there are a few things that kind of concern me as I see it. So if you look at twos, tens, so the difference between the 2-year bond and the 10-year yield, it actually first inverted in April. Typically, when you look at the timing between curve inversion and recession, it's about 12 months. So, you know, we've kind of rolled forward 6 now, and it already looks like the data is softening and that curve inversion was correct. At the time, what the Federal Reserve said was, don't worry about that. We prefer to use the 3-month versus the 10-year. Which is very similar, but because it's a shorter dated bond, it kind of takes a little bit longer to invert. And over the past kind of month and a half, that's flattened from about 150 points down to 9. Typically, once you get the cash rate above the 10-year bond yield, it's game over. You're looking at the bond market saying, we don't think you can keep moving cash like this because otherwise the 10-year should be 2% higher. The breakdown of all of that is certainly what you're seeing in the US is very concerning, and what you're seeing in Australia kind of suggests we might be able to skate through if we're lucky enough.
Yeah, it certainly looks like, given, I guess, to some extent, the world's pain is Australia's gain because we are so commodity rich. We're a food producer. We're producing all the things that people have to pay extra for at the moment. So income wise, you know, we're probably going to be okay. The big question is whether we can withstand a global recession and remain on our own. And, you know, just to steal the RBA second paragraph, you know, they mention global uncertainty as being one of the biggest risks to the outlook at the moment. You have obviously gas supply issues in Europe. We still have COVID floating around. That certainly hasn't gone away. And, you know, it's fairly pronounced in Australia and New Zealand, but elsewhere in the world. And I guess, you know, you've got China starting to slow. And now you've got the US with Nancy Pelosi talking about going to Taiwan, kind of, I guess, thumbing their nose a little bit at the Chinese. And whether it's calling their bluff on certain things or not, I don't know. But it seems to be maybe not an unnecessary thing, but it doesn't seem to be a positive in the scheme of things at the moment to help the global economy recover. You know, is there other things out there that you're sort of seeing that are worrying you?
I feel like we're always kind of describing something that worries us. You know, that certainly the ongoing disruptions from food and commodities still coming from Russia and Ukraine is, I think, causing the biggest problems in the market still. The oil price has been coming off a little bit, which should help the inflation backdrop. If you could see the oil price kind of drop, I think it's about $92 now. If you could see that drop into the low 80s, we probably should see some negative month-on-month prints in inflation, which gives, you know, the RBA, the Fed, the Bank of England and the Bank of Canada and all the other central banks just moment to kind of say, we've hiked 200 now, we've got some negative month on month, let's just sit on our hands. So I don't think that from a rates perspective, it's all bad. It's just certainly feels like, you know, every time there's a time to rest, there's some other, you know, geopolitical thing popping up that just throws a spanner in the works.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the main themes we've seen out of the central banks, is that they're still talking quite aggressive on rates, but they have opened the door now to easing off or pausing to see what's actually happening. And I think that was probably the first sort of signs that, you know, they think they're getting closer to what they think is neutral. It's obviously a little bit higher than what we think is neutral, but, you know, it's certainly a long way. I mean, we had 3-year bond yields at over 4% not that long ago. We're now down, back down into the, you know, below 3%, well below 3%. So we've seen raise markets, you know, move quite aggressively over the last few months. And I think, you know, the last 2 months have probably been some of the most volatile that I've ever experienced. And, you know, I hope that if the central banks are getting to that point, you know, perhaps we'll start to see some more calm markets in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I guess the positive that I see with respect to that as well is that 3-month tenure in the US, when it's inverted in the past, that's been the end of the hiking cycles. And so it's always kind of, I think, very hard beforehand to figure out exactly where they're going to stop. But the curve, once it starts inverting, is a very good signal that you're at least close to the end. And I think that says, you know, maybe the Fed gets us close to 3%, but it feels like they're going to stop closer to 3 than they do to 4.
Well, that's it for this month. If you ever want to suggest topics or discuss further things with Chris and I, we can be contacted at theratedebate@yarracm.com. Tune in next month when we deliver our latest thoughts on the RBA's September rate decision and provide an update on what's been happening in markets. Until next time, stay safe.
The Rate Debate podcast content may contain general advice. Before acting on anything in this podcast, you should consider your own objectives, financial situation, or needs, and seek the advice of an appropriately qualified financial advisor.